Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Florida has a dangerous mix of people right now when it comes to coronavirus. We've got an aging population throughout the Sunshine State, plus lots and lots of young spring break visitors who, as we've seen on some video around beaches, still like to hang out in large groups. This week, we learned at least 19 long-term care facilities here in Florida have either a suspected or confirmed case of COVID-19. And it has been deadly at one senior care facility in Broward County.
That's right. Now, Agency for Healthcare Administration Secretary Mary Mayhew says she has sent experts to these affected facilities, including an epidemiologist and an infectious disease prevention specialist, as well as other officials trained on the virus. Mayhew says she's really concerned about how hospitals are working with nursing homes. That's where the sickest patients live. But the state so far has been reluctant to release specific details about which facilities have had those confirmed or suspected cases.
Now, later this hour, we're going to talk about the massive changes that have been made to public education because of COVID-19. Schools across the state are closed. Districts are rushing to set up online learning. Tests have been canceled. Parents, teachers, students all scrambling to adjust to school with no classroom. That's later on in the hour.
So much change so quickly. But first, a look at the most at-risk Floridians, seniors who are living in nursing homes.
They're pretty vulnerable because it's a congregate living situation.
Rona Bartlestone is a geriatric care specialist in Broward County.
Unless you are self-quarantining to your own room, and many people share rooms, it's going to be very hard. And we don't have a lot of isolation capacity. I think it's a serious threat.
So do you or a family member live in a senior facility, a nursing home, assisted living facility? Have you visited there with families and young people still crowding some beaches here in Florida? What's the risk to seniors? Let us know your experiences on social media. Find us at Florida Roundup on Twitter.
Alexandra Glorioso has been covering the story for Politico, and she joins us now. Alexandra, thanks for being with us. You know, hospitals and nursing homes, as you report, have been in the habit for a long time of transferring patients back and forth. Some hospitals are equipped to handle coronavirus patients, but nursing homes are not. So how concerned are health officials right now about the spread of the virus this way?
Hi, thanks for having me, guys. I love coming on your show, as always. Yeah, it's a big problem. Secretary Mayhew is really concerned about it. She told me in an interview the other day that she does not want any transfers between from hospitals to nursing homes if the patient has not been tested for the coronavirus, you know, and if they're exhibiting symptoms. Because nursing homes, you know, have really blocked their doors to the general public for over a week now, and they are the most vulnerable population. And if one patient comes from the hospital with coronavirus, they could really take out the entire nursing home. So it really is sort of creating this bottleneck in what is otherwise a normal conduct of business.
It's certainly prudent to lock down these homes to outside visitors. Now, the state, as you report, is also setting up a 24/7 hotline for nursing homes. How will that work? What's the status of that hotline?
So I don't think it's up yet. I haven't gotten confirmation since I talked to the secretary that it's up and running, but it's supposed to be up at any moment. And the idea is that nursing home administrators can call the state if they're concerned that one of their patients has coronavirus. And that could be a patient that's supposed to be coming in, or that could be a patient that they think they might have to transfer out to a hospital because they can't treat them for the virus in-house. So ideally, they call and then somebody is manning the desk 24 hours a day, and there will be strike teams ready that, as you described, with an epidemiologist and an infectious disease prevention specialist, a person who works for the state agency for healthcare administration who is very familiar with the facility that, you know, it's the person who does all of the normal surveys of that facility throughout the year. So they should have a lot of familiarity of getting in there and out. And the idea is to immediately quarantine these patients and then develop a kind of all hands on deck approach to get them to a safe hospital so that they can be treated.
We should note that Governor Ron DeSantis has just issued an executive order directing all movie theaters, concert houses, auditoriums, playhouses, bowling alleys, arcades, gyms, fitness studios, and beaches to close. This is in Broward County and Palm Beach County through the end of the month. This is a rapidly changing situation, Alexandra, and there's likely to be more orders like that. Now, as you reported, epidemiologists, infectious disease specialists are interacting with the seniors in the nursing homes. They have raised concerns that they are not protected from the virus because they're having trouble getting the proper personal protective equipment. So we don't yet know the extent of the spread among the senior population, and healthcare workers are being exposed as well in these homes, correct?
Yeah, so there is a lot of uncertainty around who has protective gear and who doesn't. As Governor DeSantis has said recently in press conferences, you know, this poor man is having nightmares mm-hmm. about N95 masks, he says, because, yeah. you know, he can't get any for his healthcare workers. And, you know, these are common masks. We just went to India over Christmas and bought the same masks for air pollution in the airport in Delhi and, you know, around the city. So it seems like he seems to think, and Andy Slavitt, you know, was just on one of the, you know, TV shows the other day saying, he was Obama's administrator for CMS. He was saying that, you know, certain entrepreneurs are hoarding protective gear. And it seems like officials all over the country are trying to figure out where this gear is being held and sold. And Governor DeSantis has said basically the same thing. So I've heard from, you know, physicians and other kinds of healthcare workers that it's an ongoing problem. People don't have the right equipment.
It certainly is a problem for all of the states. Governors are feeling all the anxiety you just described, Governor DeSantis experiencing. At the same time, I'd like to get your thoughts about the unique set of circumstances in Florida. As Tom pointed out, you know, we've got a dangerous mix of people milling around this state at the moment. We've got the large senior population, which we always have, and we've been hosting big crowds of spring breakers who have been very reluctant to stay off the beaches, stop congregating in large groups. They have been thinning out lately. But what are you hearing from state officials about this particular risk that we're seeing right now in the month of March?
I think that state officials are terrified. I mean, it's the state of Florida, in my mind, as I report about it, is tracking, I think, most closely to Italy. And it has a very similar kind of mix of people. Like you said, there was such an elderly, you know, base population of people in Florida. There are people traveling frequently from Fort Lauderdale to New York, which is a high outbreak area. And, you know, not all of this stuff has really been shut down. And Florida lawmakers are dealing with this huge, immense, like, coming economic cliff. And I think that the governor is worried about facing a huge recession. And so are lawmakers at the state capitol, because, you know, they're conservative. They've put a lot of money into reserves. And yet Florida's economy is very dependent on tourism, and it has a very high service population, just like Italy. And what we're discovering now is that, you know, the virus is more deadly in elderly people and people with underlying health conditions. But also, we may have been just testing far more elderly people in Italy because it has an elderly population. And so we might have thought that the virus would only impact elderly people erroneously when it could be devastating to young people as well, just maybe not deadly.
Right. We are getting reports of young people becoming seriously ill with coronavirus, not as often as seniors, but it is happening. And in some cases, it has been fatal for younger people. Now, as you mentioned, the service industry is such a huge part of the state's economy. The governor and the legislature are looking at hundreds of millions of dollars in reserves for relief efforts. Right now, they're talking about small business loans to restaurants and other small businesses that are going to have to shut their doors. A lot of these folks will tell you that a loan is not going to be of help to them. They're reluctant to take on any more debt. They'd rather just go out of business than take on another loan. What's the word in Tallahassee about relief for small business and the service sector? And what conversations are happening there?
Yeah, I mean, the governor has been the one talking the most about this. I could be wrong, but I thought I saw on Twitter the other day that he announced something about small business loan approvals coming from the federal government. I'm not totally positive about that one, but he has expressed that he really wants, you know, the federal government to help out with that. I don't know exactly what the state really can do. I mean, the state has some work requirements related to unemployment assistance that he has said through, you know, an executive order, he's probably going to suspend. In general, he's been suspending a lot of, you know, red tape, a lot of license requirements for different kinds of professions. So, you know, if you're a hairdresser and you have your own, you know, hairstyling salon, perhaps, you know, you could get some renewal license requirement delayed, for instance, or if you're a doctor or, you know, other kinds of things like that. But I really think that any kind of major assistance is probably going to have to come from the federal government.
Yeah. Alexandra Glorioso with Politico. Stick with us, Alex, as we continue the conversation.
Thanks.
Brian Lee is executive director of Families for Better Care. That's a national watchdog group for nursing homes, looking at nursing homes. Brian served as the long-term care ombudsman for the Florida Department of Elderly Affairs for 7 years. He joins us on the telephone. Brian, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for your time today. Do you think the state of Florida should release specific names and addresses of senior facilities that have confirmed or suspected COVID-19 infections?
First of all, thank you for having me on this afternoon. And a simple answer to that question is yes. And the question is, why haven't they? I know I've seen the information that publicly is being stated that they're trying to protect the identities of the individuals who are living in these facilities. And I can understand their concern, but there are families, there are residents who are living in these places. They should know if there are potential outbreaks happening in any long-term care facility. So, you know, going back to what Alex was saying a moment ago, and what you know, I've been talking about, this hedge of protection that has been established around nursing homes to stop the visitation, to try to stymie this virus, it is a prudent, it's the right move. You know, it's as an advocate, we always want to make sure that families have the ability to interact and communicate and mm-hmm. visit with their loved ones. But right now it's needed. I mean, this virus is lethal.
Brian, let me ask you, it's been a week since Governor DeSantis put a stop to all visitors to nursing homes, except for those in the case of end of life are very essential. Obviously, this doesn't apply necessarily to healthcare workers, but for family visits and friend visits, is that enough? Are there additional steps that could be taken by the state and by the Department of Elderly Affairs to continue to try to build a moat around these facilities?
Yeah, I like that. Build a moat. They got to keep digging. That's for sure. Look, the whole idea is to try to keep our loved ones safe. Mm-hmm. Totally understand that. But what I saw in the directive from federal officials and I've seen with, you know, Governor DeSantis's executive order is the erection of this this barrier, this protection. But what we need to have too, it has to be assurances that the families have a conduit, a line of communication to their loved one.
Yeah. So let me ask you along those lines, Ryan. Okay. What are the rights of residents and families to know about the health of other residents in assisted living facilities, in rehabilitation centers, in skilled nursing facilities that are the focus of this vulnerable population?
Well, I don't know so much I could say that the right to have information about the other individual. They definitely have the right to have information about their loved one, if they're especially the legal representative advocating on or acting on behalf of their loved one. But the nursing homes and other senior care facilities have to make sure that they're making every accommodation to connect families who are isolated, who are afraid. The guidance that was written was not favorable to rights per se. It said that the facility should consider allowing some sort of additional kind of telecommunication or offer other venues for communication. So there was a protection that was established, but with the stopping of the visitation, but the communication was not as strong as we would like to see, and it could be better. Because right now there's no communal dining happening with any, there's no social interaction.
Right.
And so folks are just isolated in their rooms.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, they're scared and their families are scared. So.
And so from a family perspective, right, from a family member who may have a loved one in one of these facilities, how best are they to go about getting information at all, given the Department of Health's protections on privacy have stopped the DOH from releasing even the names of these homes or the addresses of the homes? Forget about the individuals that have tested, confirmed, or suspected, but just even the locations.
That does nothing but cause more confusion and even more hysteria. I mean, if, you know, public officials have got to be honest with us of what's happening. I mean, this is a global crisis. This is the elderly capital of America. We should know what's going on within our long-term care facilities. There are people that are living across the country, across the world, who have loved ones in these facilities. They need to know what's happening. So to hide behind, you know, that we're trying to protect the identities of individuals, you know, doesn't fly with me. This is, you know, that they need to be honest about what's happening, so everyone can take appropriate precautions. They can, you know, gives people peace of mind to know what's happening, because the longer they don't know, that we don't know what's happening, the more problems could just snowball out of control.
And so what's a family member supposed to do in regards right now to a long care facility? And I got less than a minute before our break, but just give us a quick rundown and we can come back to it.
Just be in touch with the administration and staff, know who the caregivers are, work on each shift. Have some kind of, I know some facilities have listservs that they've developed to communicate through text messaging to families. You know, get on those listservs, know who those folks are. We want to hand it to nursing homes. They're doing their best in this really difficult environment, and I know that they're trying. So give them the benefit of the doubt, give them some grace, but try to get on as many communication
Brian, speaking of which, just hold on. We're going to talk more. Brian Lee is Executive Director of Families for Better Care, a national watchdog group for nursing homes. We're going to talk more about screening and supplies for nursing homes and medical supplies across Florida as the Florida Roundup continues from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Send us your tweets here on the Florida Roundup as we discuss the state's response to coronavirus. Tweet us at Florida Roundup as we continue the conversation with Alexandra Glorioso of Politico, Brian Lee, Executive Director of Families for Better Care, a national watchdog group for nursing homes and for seniors. Alexandra, listening to Brian talk a minute ago about the isolation senior citizens are dealing with, you know, seniors in nursing homes and assisted living are isolated to begin with. Now their isolation is even more extreme. They can't get visits from family members. Some of these folks might be ill with other problems, and their loved ones can't come see them. And this is likely to get more intense as the weeks go by. The isolation and social distancing, the health effects for our seniors, I think, are particularly acute right now. It's going to be tough on all of us, but especially for this population, right?
Yeah, and it's actually not even just seniors. The people living in nursing homes can be younger if they have an illness that is debilitating enough. You know, anyone with Medicaid can technically live in a nursing home. So you could have even potentially really sick young people who don't have any access to anybody. And I just think that it's a pretty devastating circumstance for anybody who's living in one of those facilities right now. And I was pretty interested in Brian's comment about, you know, the HIPAA laws. That is what the health, you know, Secretary Mary Mayhew is citing as to why she cannot release the names of those nursing homes and their locations.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder if that will get loosened up, Tom, you know, in the coming weeks.
Right. Yeah, the HIPAA law is federal law that essentially does not allow healthcare facilities to release health information of a patient without their acknowledgement, without their permission. Right, Brian? And is what the public needs that level of information? And is the address of a facility that has had a patient test positive covered under HIPAA in your understanding of HIPAA?
It's to protect the personal health information of residents. You know, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but I would have to say that protecting the address rights of a facility probably would not fall under the HIPAA laws. But again, I would have to go back and check that myself. But I think that openness is what is transparency is what's needed at this time. And this is just, again, a pattern of what we've seen over the years of trying to shroud important health information, public health information from individuals who need it, the public who need it. I don't think that it's the intent of any agency or state official to divulge the individual health information of those who are living in the facility. But there should be an awareness when there is a public health crisis, when there's a fire that's happening, you know, everybody should know. That what's occurring for the benefit of those residents who are living there and their families and the staff. You know, it's fair to all of us. You know, to get ahead of this virus. You know, we've been playing. I think we've been a little bit on our heels with this from the beginning. We have to get out in front of it by providing information to the public, the best information available. Is an important way to do that. And screening, I know we're going to talk about screening in a moment, but screening is super critical right now of healthcare workers and, I will even say this, of residents themselves.
Right. Brian, you know, that is what we're hearing from everyone. And Alexandra, you've been covering how the state is really doing everything it can to respond to this. But Brian's right. The U.S. has been very slow off the jump to get serious about this crisis, to conduct widespread screenings and testings. Drive-through testing facilities are popping up around the state, but they will be testing a pretty small population of people, at least in the early going. We cannot get the supplies and equipment we need. And going beyond the senior population, let me ask you this question. What we're hearing from hospitals more broadly is that they are very concerned that as cases spike, that there just won't be enough ICU beds and enough equipment, respirators and ventilators for critically ill patients, that there won't be enough of them to go around. You compared Florida to Italy, and what we saw in the reports coming out of Italy is that it became an absolutely crushing situation in hospitals when they had to make decisions on the fly about who would get the life-saving equipment and who would not. What are you hearing from state officials about these scenarios?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because I would say at this point, you know, the comparison starts to break down. Italy has a, you know, centralized health system, and America has a very decentralized health system. And I don't know all the particulars about how they got overwhelmed so quickly, but I think the challenge in America is going to be effectively communicating and coordinating across all these private entities that, you know, don't typically work that well together in normal common day.
And on a good day, right.
Right. Yeah. And so the government is under a very, very fast, extraordinary burden to try and use all of its leveraging power to coordinate across all these disparate health systems. And that's going to be really tough.
Brian Lee, let me ask you, do you have experience when you were the ombudsman with the elderly services agency in the state of Florida? Did you have experience with the medical supplies stockpile that exists?
No, we had issues from time to time where folks would have to, you know, donning the gear, but never the stockpiling, because again, this is just so unprecedented where a crisis like this is just hitting everyone at the same time. I think that now that we have America's kind of getting this posture of a wartime footing, and I think that's how we have to approach this. And hopefully maybe the unleashing of manufacturers to assist in producing the equipment that is needed. Those N95 masks that Alexandra was talking about a moment ago, she was able to pick up. I wish I could pick up a couple for myself someplace we needed them. But it's tough to find them. And, you know, the private sector can help out. You know, the one thing that we know historically that it is comparable to what's facing the globe right now is, you know, the last big crisis like this, I see World War II. And the one thing that America does well is it can unify together and respond in action. And I think now that like I said before, we're a little late getting to the game here, but I think we're starting to unify. And again, the public and private sectors can start to come together to create those equipment supplies we need. Like, you know, I said, we need to screen as many people as we possibly can. I know that the governor was saying that there's a shortage on cotton swabs, the personal protective equipment. Let's get that stuff. Let's get those manufacturing companies churning. You know, those companies here that make cars. I mean, they used to make airplanes when we needed them for the World War II effort. Because right now, if we don't have those testing swabs and all of that equipment, it's like sending our soldiers to conquer Germany and the Nazis in World War II with spitballs instead of rifles, because that's what is needed right now are those testing equipment so we can find out who is sick, get them the help they need, separate them out from the population within these places that aren't sick, because we know this virus, people can be asymptomatic and have it and be carriers and completely not realize that they're passing around.
That's right.
I think it's so prudent for us to get people tested.
Absolutely right. And thank you so much for that. Thank you both. Alexandra Glorioso of Politico, Brian Lee, Executive Director of Families for Better Care, a national watchdog group for nursing homes and seniors. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, school has been out across Florida for a week now. Public schools closed down for at least a couple of weeks, perhaps longer in some cases, in this effort to slow the spread of COVID-19. Classrooms are moving online. State tests have been canceled. Jessica Bakeman is education reporter at WLRN here in Miami. She joins us now remotely. Jessica, how are schools trying to move classes online, this massive deployment of devices and connectivity?
Right. So this is something that the whole state is contending with now. Miami-Dade County had a bit of a head start. They transitioned to remote learning this week, whereas most other school districts are planning to do that after this coming week, which was the previously planned spring break for most districts. So basically, a lot of districts, including Broward, Palm Beach, the Monroe County, the Keys, are having like a 2-week spring break and then working to transition to remote learning after that, whereas Miami-Dade got a week of it in the books here. But basically, the school districts are leveraging the online resources that they already have. Obviously, you know, there are a lot of online assignments and programs that schools use to begin with in their classroom. So that helps in the fact that like students are already familiar with what these programs look like and how to use them. The biggest question is, you know, does every child have access to a device at home? Right. Does every child have access to internet connectivity?
It really
at home?
Shines a spotlight on the digital divide that exists in so many communities in Florida. People that don't have regular access to the internet, don't have a device, don't have internet connectivity, and may have relied on a library, for instance, or some other, or a public park even, which are closed now.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, even families that have devices at home might not have enough devices to have one for each child that is in their home. So basically, the school districts have been surveying families to try to find out what the need is. They've been distributing devices such as computers and tablets. Broward County, for example, is doing this literally right now. They're doing it from 8 to 2 p.m. today, where people can go to their schools, their child's regular school, to pick up devices.
On Friday here as we're talking right now, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And the internet question, Comcast has a program called Internet Essentials, where you can get 60 days of internet free, and then after that, $10 a month if you are a person who already qualifies for some type of government assistance. I have heard about some hiccups with getting signed up for that. And also, I guess Comcast has made the Xfinity hotspots free to use. Mm. But one of the problems there is that there is not great coverage in some communities. Yeah. So a lot of the communities that don't have those hotspots are also the ones that may be struggling to get devices and internet connectivity.
Just real quick, where's the resources for these devices? Where's that? Have these devices been in storage and inventory for the districts?
So most of them are devices that students would have been using in classrooms already. So basically they're just sending them home with students instead of having them use them in the classrooms. But the state is telling districts, essentially all of the funding that you'd be using for a lot of other things right now for the short term, we're giving you the go ahead to reallocate that funding to purchase more devices and to purchase internet access and get all of that into the community as quickly as possible.
Jessica, hold the line here with us. We want to talk more about this. Jessica Bakeman, education reporter at WLRN in Miami, and you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
So how are teachers feeling about the closing of schools? Frederick Ingram is the president of the State Teachers Union, the Florida Education Association. Frederick, thanks for being with us. Hi, Frederick. Are you there?
Hey, I'm here. How are you?
Good to have you on the Florida Roundup. Hope you're doing well. What's the FEA, their position on the closing of schools?
Well, listen, we given the circumstances, we think the closing of schools was the right decision by the governor. And, you know, certainly no one wanted schools to close. Certainly we, our teachers and educational support professionals, college and university professors, we want to instruct our kids. But this pandemic takes first and foremost priority. And the health and safety of our kids, our families, and our communities should be at first issue. So we certainly agree with the governor's decision.
And how are teachers dealing with this? This is a massive undertaking. What support advice are teachers getting from your group, and what feedback are you getting from the teachers about this change?
So we're being led by four principles. One is the health and safety of our students. We believe that as a school system, as a statewide school system, we have secured that to the best of our abilities to let the parents facilitate the best health and safety procedures necessary. Number two, the health and safety of employees. These folks are the people who deal with kids each and every day. And so we want, as they go back to school or as they try to deal with this distance learning or remote learning or virtual schools, we want to make sure that our administrators understand that we still want to adhere to the CDC regulations of not more than 10 people, of not congregating in groups, and we want people to be healthy. And number three, we want continuity of education. That continuity of education includes some of those things that I just mentioned, the virtual schools, and we're fast tracking training for individuals across the state. Many of our school districts are going at it in a different way, and we're monitoring and helping to facilitate many different avenues. And finally, the financial impacts, both short term and long term. We want our people to make sure that they continue to get paid. We want to continue funding in our technology grants so that people have the hardware and software that they need to facilitate teaching and learning.
Right. And in fact, you've been advocating for teachers to get a raise in Florida. The proposed state budget that begins in July does include hundreds of millions more for teacher pay. You've said you'd like to see that raised even further.
Yeah, well, we worked really hard this legislative session. Legislative session, as you know, started in January. On January 13th, we brought 15,000 people to Tallahassee to speak with one voice that we had some serious concerns and issues with as it relates to teacher pay, the working conditions of our teachers. And in fact, we know that we have a teacher shortage crisis that we're trying to manage here in the state of Florida. So we felt like we were successful, that the governor made a proposal that was something that we could work with. The legislature dealt with it in the way that they saw fit, and our members' voices were heard. But we certainly have a long way to go as it relates to teacher pay. Right now, our first and foremost goal is to make sure and ensure that our members are safe, that we have continuous learning, and that we can deal with the impacts of this virus.
And we will continue, hold that thought, Frederick. We'll continue discussing this as we look at a nearly unprecedented situation, the closure of all schools in the state for at least a month. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We're going to continue the conversation in just a moment. Don't go away.
I get corona. At the end of the day, I'm not going to let it stop me from partying.
It's really messing up with my spring break. What what is there to do here other than go to the bars or the beach? And they're closing all of it. It's really messing up. I think they're blowing it way out of proportion.
That's spring breakers in Florida complaining about the closing of bars during the coronavirus outbreak. It didn't go over well. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami, talking about the historic closure of all public schools in the state of Florida to fight the spread of COVID-19 coronavirus. At Florida Roundup is our Twitter handle. Jessica Bakeman is education reporter at WLRN. Frederick Ingram is president of the Florida Education Association. Jessica, when it comes to this online instruction that is happening, for how long is that expected to be? And is it expected to be a uniform length across the state? Or could some districts go back into the classroom before the end of the scheduled school year and others remain out?
Well, these are all questions we don't really have answers to yet. Yeah. But currently where we're at is, you know, the state has ordered that schools will be closed through at least April 15th. I think a lot of school districts are preparing for the possibility that remote or digital learning could continue through the end of the school year. I know the state also suggested that school districts prepare to extend their educational calendar through June 30th, if possible. So I would assume that that means if we get to the point where it's safe to reopen schools, we may need to have a longer school year than necessary in order for students to catch up. And, you know, as far as whether the decision is going to be uniform and happen, you know, depending whether it's happening on the local level or the state level, we did see school districts in South Florida take action and decide to close schools before that directive came down from the state. But now that the state has made a statewide decision, I would guess that school district leaders will continue to look to Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran and Governor Ron DeSantis for guidance on where to go from here. But we're sitting tight for a while.
Yeah.
Frederick Ingram, president of the Florida Education Association, you know, testing, mandated statewide testing and even school grades have been suspended for the time being. Would this crisis over time perhaps change, bend the curve, to use another metaphor, when it comes to standardized tests? And what's the FEA's position on that?
Well, I will tell you, for this year, we were glad to see tests being canceled and suspended and moving forward without those state mandates. We will continue to fight what we believe is right, to have fewer tests, to have fewer mandates and fewer high stakes as it relates to those tests. We certainly don't want to politicize this pandemic or the issue of people getting sick and use that as a pivot point to get rid of or add anything. What we're trying to do is ensure that our students are safe, that our employees are safe, both the educational support professionals and the teachers, because what we've learned in the last few days is that our frontline folks, our cafeteria workers, our custodians, our bus drivers, are just as important to the educational continuity that we need to move forward.
Frederick, let me ask you about that continuity and planning. As Jessica mentioned, there may be a plan, for instance, if students do come back into the classrooms with teachers, the school year getting extended into June or so. Is the Florida Education Association, your union members, prepared for that? What are the metrics that you are going to be looking at to decide whether or not you support that kind of extension of the school year for public school teachers and kids in Florida?
So what I've been most pleased about is that we have been working with Commissioner Corcoran. We've been in contact with him pretty much all week this week. And we will continue to be in contact with superintendents and worker strategy. Right now, it's too early to tell where we need to go. Right now, we're trying to get to what would have been the end of the school year. Mm-hmm. We know that funding has been allocated. We know that school districts are operational financially. We just know that we need to operate in a different circumstance. And that first circumstance right now is to keep people healthy, keep them safe, and then deal with the continuity of education through virtual schools, technology, and what we can. So we will cross that bridge when we get there.
And Jessica Bakeman, you've been looking into some of the different types of online learning schools are going to try. So it might vary a little bit depending on where you go to school?
Yeah, definitely. Depending on the school districts, the school, depending on your teachers and the class, online learning can really take a lot of different forms. And for example, Palm Beach County announced this week that they're going to have like Google Hangouts where teachers are actually teaching students live. And they're also going to have pre-recorded lessons that will be available online, as well as actually broadcast on the district's own TV station, which they're hoping can be helpful if there are students who are not able to actually sit down in front of the computer at the moment that their teacher is teaching live. Maybe they have a parent who's working and has a different schedule and they need to be doing their work in the evening versus during the day. I spoke yesterday with the chief academic officer at Broward County Public Schools. And he was telling me, you know, okay, I said, how do we do physical education? How do we do music? How do we do art, you know? And he was saying, well, you know, for now, the orchestra can't play together, but we're still going to have opportunities for individual students to perform music either live via live stream with their teacher or make a recording of performing music. And then the teacher will be able to evaluate it and give feedback. So I think they're coming up with some pretty creative ways of making things that don't seem like they would work online for now.
We will follow it as it happens. And I believe kids have to click on attendance at certain times during the day, too, to ensure teachers that they're there and doing their work. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
And Frederick Ingram, president of the Florida Education Association, tell us about what the setup is even for next year, right? Class promotions, the status of testing. I know it's very foggy. There's not a lot of visibility, and I've already asked you about the end of this school year, but you got to be thinking about what the next school year may look like.
Well, we are. And, you know, right now, everything is depending on what, you know, Human Health and Services tells us, the federal government, you know, in terms of the crisis. I cannot emphasize enough, safety is going to be first and foremost where we are. We are going to plan for an opening of school just like we always do. We're actually going to plan for a closing of school like we always do. It's going to be slightly different. It's not going to include testing. It may not include a physical graduation for students. It may not include, you know, those end of the year concerts and ceremonies. But technology is not new to our teachers. It's not new to public schools. This is not something that we have just come across. Our teachers use technology every day. The depth and breadth in which we have to use it now is quite different, but we are certainly adjusting, and we certainly will accommodate every student like we always do. And like we always tell people, our public schools are still the vessels of hope, and people are starting to see that more and more every day.
Yeah, I mean, kids are going to bus stops to get meals that they would normally get, Jessica, on the school campus. So many kids across the state on free or reduced lunch. And so it's going to be tough for families, many families that have kids at home. And also, I would say, seniors, high school seniors. This isn't a big deal in the overall context of what we're dealing with in terms of a crisis, but they're not going to get to do all of the things seniors typically do. Walk in cap, most likely not. Walk in cap and gown, have grad night parties, and all of that. So it will be difficult for that group of students as well.
Absolutely. Broward County Superintendent Robert Runcie spoke about that this week at a press conference and said, you know, it is a really painful, disappointing time for especially seniors in high school. And, you know, that goes for seniors in college, too. And you make a good point, of course, in the grand scheme of things. It's much less important to walk across the stage than it is to preserve health and life. But I think everyone can relate to those special moments, prom, graduation, even high school musicals and athletic events and things that, you know, we're going to be missing out on. As far as the food situation, which is, you know, of course, even that much more important, you bring up that school districts have been doing some creative things to try to distribute food to students without having people congregate in large groups, which obviously is, you know, against the guidance that we're getting from the CDC and the federal government and state government on social distancing. But unfortunately, because next week for most school districts was the previously planned spring break, a lot of school districts had not intended to distribute meals during that time. Some are still not going to. I heard from Broward County today that they are not going to have meals next week, but they will have them the following week when school would have started up again in school buildings and will be starting up again online. I heard that Palm Beach County will continue to have food next week. Miami-Dade has said they're working with community partners to try to make that happen, and some more details will come forward. Also, there's the summerbreakspot.org, which is something that families should bookmark. That's a site where you can put in your address or your zip code and find local sites where you'll be able to pick up breakfast or lunch. That, unfortunately, will not be running during the week when a school district would be on spring break. But I know there are nonprofits that are stepping in and trying to fill the gap. So we'll do our best to keep reporting on that and make sure people know where they can get food.
Awfully important part of that fabric of any community, of course, of the public schools. Jessica Bakeman, education reporter at WLR in Miami. Jessica, thanks for sharing your reporting with us here on the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Frederick Ingram is president of the Florida Education Association, the Teachers Union, Education Workers Union Group. Frederick, nice to have you on the program as well. Thanks for sharing your experience with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Online learning, Melissa, I will share with you, is underway in the Hudson household. My high school freshman has now referred to himself as part of the Zoom generation.
Yeah. My kids begged me to tell the school district that we do not have internet access at home. But I did not do that, much to their disappointment. Yeah. That's our show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers.
Jason Zabka, the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, Director of Radio Operations, Technical Director is Peter Mertz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, Josh Torres. Also help from Alejandra Martinez. Theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos. I'm Tom Hudson.
I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next week.